Good afternoon. How are you today? What a crowd. What a bunch of geeks. I hope you're a bunch of geeks because the material is pretty geeky. It's pretty nerdy and Windows internals and all kinds of horrible things like that. So strap yourselves in, get ready. If you fall asleep, perfectly understandable. Try not to snore because other people, there might be someone who wants to listen. So welcome. My name is Aaron Margosis. I'm the co-author of the Windows Sysinternals Administrator's Reference with Mark Rasinovich, who is the author of the Sysinternals Utilities. And this is the Sysinternals Primer Tech Ed 2013 edition. This is the book, the Windows Sysinternals Administrator's Reference, by Mark Rasinovich and Aaron Margosis. Thank you. It's Mark always jokes that he finally agreed to have my name put on the book by the fact that I did the bulk of the work on it. Actually, he did want it smaller. He did want it in a smaller font. And Microsoft Press said, no, we can't do that. Because if we make it any smaller, then we'll need to ship a magnifying glass with every single copy of the book. And that'll raise the price too much. This was the compromise. If you're interested in the Sysinternals Utilities, this is the resource that you want to get your hands on. Don't confuse this with the Windows Internals series that Mark has been co-authoring with David Solomon and most recently with Alex Ionescu for the last several editions. The Windows Internals series talks about the operating system and how the different subsystems work, how the memory management works, how the I/O subsystem works, how the security system works. This is all about the Sysinternals Utilities. So Mark and formerly his colleague Bryce Cogswell put together, as I'm sure most of you know, a whole bunch of free tools that are absolutely indispensable for any kind of troubleshooting on the Windows platform. And what it needed was some good documentation, and we put this book together. It took 2 years to put it together because we wanted to make sure it was accurate and complete, that there was nothing left out, and that everything we put in the book was absolutely correct. As a result, we discovered a few bugs and fixed up some tools to make sure they actually did what they were supposed to do. But this is the first edition. It came out 2 years ago. And Mark and I are currently in talks with Microsoft Press to work on a second edition, which will cover some of the changes that have taken place since then. Things are going okay with the negotiations, but there's, of course, the one sticking point that happens all the time with books. Movie rights, right? And Mark in particular is being very insistent about who's going to play him in the movie version of the book. he's not in the room, I know. I'm pretty sure he's not in the room. And I'm going to delete the recording before it goes live. So the Sysinternals Primer has been going on for a few years. This is the fourth one. The idea came from a colleague of mine in Microsoft, a technical account manager named Tim Reckmeyer, who had been to, like a bunch of us, the Case of the Unexplained, Mark's premier big crowd-pleasing talk about troubleshooting on the Windows platform. But it talks a lot about here's the problem that was set up, here's how we debugged, et cetera. And Tim had the idea, how about a session that just talks about the tools and just talks about as many of the features of the tools as possible. And so the first one in 2010 talked about Process Explorer, Process Monitor, and PSExec. The next one in 2011 did some of the lesser known tools, well, still very important tools, but somewhat lesser known. Last year, we got extremely nerdy. We did some deep dive things you can do with Process Monitor filtering, and then use the Sysinternals Utilities to dive into some little-known areas of the Windows internal structure in ways that I thought would be significant and useful for solving problems that people run into and don't understand why it's doing it that way. Also showed the DU utility, and that was the GEMS one. So this year, what we decided to do was to talk about, since it's been 2 years since the book came out, there's a whole lot of stuff that has changed. There's a lot of new features in the tools and some new tools that have come out since the book came out. And so this will be all about what has changed since the book came out. It's kind of like a little bit of a preview of the second edition, which will also have a greatly expanded case of the unexplained and troubleshooting, and we don't know what else yet. So anyway, of course, this assumes that everyone here has read the first edition cover to cover. Is that true? How many of you have already read it? Okay. Well, you all have wireless. You can go on Amazon or O'Reilly, and you can download it. And as you finish reading, raise your hand. And when we have enough people with their hands up, then we'll continue. Okay, go. Go ahead. Thank you. Okay, never mind. So one of the things that changed since the SysInternals book came out, and this was a surprise to both of us, was a Russian language edition. They translated it into Russian and published it. And you can tell that Mark was taken by surprise by this one. Do you see why Mark would have been taken by surprise? Uh-huh. Names are in the same font size. All right. So how long did it take after the release of the book before content in it started going out of date, started becoming a little obsolete? Well, here's the blog post that announced the book. We are excited and proud to announce the release of the official SysInternals book. Okay? On the same blog post, Process Explorer version 15, major update to Process Explorer with lots of new features not covered in the book we just announced. So the same, pretty much the same day that the book was came out, there it was. It was already, it's still accurate. Everything in the book is still completely accurate. It's just no longer complete. Every feature it describes is still there. But yeah, there have been some changes. So quickly, I'm going to go over some of the broad changes that have affected a number of utilities. One is additional support for x64. A couple things change when you run programs on 64-bit Windows. First of all, 32-bit programs that try to access the System32 directory automatically get redirected to SysWOW64. And so utilities that are 32-bit, and you want them to be 32-bit so they'll run on 32-bit Windows as well as 64-bit Windows, if they try to access anything in System32 or certain parts of HP local machine software, they'll get redirected and they won't be looking at the same information that the operating system is operating on or manipulating the same areas of the system. And so what some of the changes in these tools do is to turn off that redirection temporarily. So for example, auto logon needs to hit the correct win logon key, not the one under WOW6432 node. Right, and so it turns off redirection so that it works correctly on 64-bit. A number of tools have been updated with additional support for Windows 8. In addition to things like the new file control codes and device control codes and the new security pieces like app container and capabilities and things like that, there's also some new features that make it better for diagnostic tools. In particular, event tracing for Windows, or ETW, used to be kind of a choke point where if you had multiple subscribers looking at a single ETW feed, they would collide with each other and interfere with each other. And now, if you use the new functionality, you can have multiple subscribers coexisting together without getting in each other's way. And so a number of these tools have been updated to take advantage of that. Common question, are there going to be any SysInternals tools for Windows RT, such as the Surface RT I bought at deep discount here? Well, that you bought. Microsoft employees are not eligible for that. Thanks anyway. So the answer is, let me explain a little about Windows RT. It's a different version of Windows, essentially, right? legacy programs built for x86 or x64 do not run on the ARM processor. Okay? Only stuff built for ARM and specially signed by the Windows group. Well, actually, let me take that back. Desktop apps will not run unless they're signed by the Windows group. Okay, so you can't take your legacy code and put it on the Windows RT platform. You can build, you know, the new modern, what do they call it, Windows Store style apps. You can build those and deploy those to Windows RT, but not desktop apps, not apps that are Win32 apps. And so the sysinternals tools, being among those, are not going to be allowed to run. The only ones pretty much that are on there are components of Windows and the version of Office that's built into Windows RT. Okay? Windows Group insists there's no reason to run the sysinternals utilities on Windows RT because you don't need to troubleshoot everything because everything just works great. I could say something, but I like remaining employed, so I won't. Okay, so let's get into what has changed. Chapter 3 of the sysinternals book, Process Explorer. Lots of stuff changed. A number of new features. So let's just start doing some demo. So here we are on Windows 8. And I want to start Process Explorer. So what I always do is I put the sysinternals utilities into C program files, sysinternals. I just copy them all in there. So they're in protected location, not writable by non-admin code. And I put that directory in the path so I can run them from anywhere. So I just go to the Start menu. Start menu. Windows R. There we go. Start menu. Process Explorer /E says run this process elevated, or run Process Explorer elevated. That's not a new feature. That's been there a long time. And here is Process Explorer. Now, as you know, how many of you have run Process Explorer before? Good. Okay. So as you know, there's color coding. The different processes have different colors to identify different types of processes. Services, processes running in the same account. There's new color coding that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. But as you see here, the color coding doesn't go all the way through anymore. There is now a heat map for the CPU, private bytes, and working set columns, where it will darken the color in the column when the number goes over a certain threshold relative to the total that's available for the system. Let me demonstrate that. So this is a little test utility I wrote that lets me do low-level memory operations and CPU stress and things like that. And it's on my blog. My blog is there's a link to my blog at the end of the end of this deck. I just posted it last week or so. So let me allocate 3,000 meg or 3 gig. I'm going to mark it read-write. I'm going to commit it. And I'm going to write to it and free it afterwards. And you'll see here, here's the process down here, vertmemtest64, right in this column. When I allocate that memory, you can see some things happening right down here. Okay? You may have seen the CPU column go up as it was writing to those bytes. So CPU cycles were being exercised to make that happen. You can see this color darkened because private bytes got allocated and working set. As I was writing to those bytes, they were all being pulled into RAM. And so that stuff showed up in the heat map. So you can quickly, in addition to having to look at numbers and trying to figure out which are the bigger numbers, the heat map will help you identify where the hot spots are. And for those who find that they don't like that for some reason, Mark added a very recent option to disable that, turn off column heat maps. And you get the old coloring. Personally, I find them rather useful, so I like having that feature. The new color I was talking about is this light blue for immersive apps. So what are immersive apps? Apps that are part of the new Windows 8, Windows Store, modern, blah, 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 full screen, no Chrome, all that kind of stuff. Those are immersive apps. Let me demonstrate one of those really quickly. Here is the camera, which does great stuff in my virtual machine. But I come over here, I come over back to my desktop. Okay, so when I'm in my hotel room practicing this stuff, webcam always shows up as immersive. And today, for some reason, it doesn't. Can't explain that. But you do see that it goes suspended after 5 seconds. The modern apps are not under entirely under their own control. When they lose focus, after about 5 seconds, they are suspended by the operating system to conserve battery. Okay, so this is designed for the new style apps. And of course, on the RT machines, that's pretty much all you're going to get, things that are tightly managed so you get longer battery life. Another thing you may see here is this new integrity level. This label for this integrity level, it says app container. So integrity levels were introduced in Windows Vista, and they allow you to run programs, processes, under the same user account but at different privilege levels. So everything runs at medium by default. If you run something as admin, it runs at high. If you run a protected mode process like protected mode Internet Explorer, it runs at low integrity. Low integrity processes cannot modify things at higher integrity levels. In Windows 8, they expand that. And what Mark has done in Process Explorer is to label some of these new style apps with the app container integrity level. Now, the thing is, it's not really an app container integrity level. There is no such thing explicitly. But if you go into the security tab, you'll see that when it says app container, what that means is it is running at the, where is it? Here it is. The low integrity level, but it also has an app container SID. So app container is a new security feature in Windows 8. Things that run in an app container are even more isolated between apps. So one of the problems with a lot of processes running at low is they can interfere with each other, no problem. So once you get everything running at low, you know, you're back in the same spot. Processes can interfere with each other. But with app container, apps are isolated from one another. And so the app container integrity level is intended to show that these processes are under that kind of isolation. Is this thing going to give me trouble all day? Okay. New feature here is you've had the create dump feature for a while. You can create a mini dump or a full dump. What a dump is it captures the state of a process, the memory, the stacks, the registers, so that you can see what was going on at that point in time. It drops it into a file, and then you can analyze it at a later time. The change in Process Explorer since the book came out is for 32-bit processes on a 64-bit system, it'll create a 32-bit dump rather than a 64-bit dump. Because when you're debugging a 32-bit process, it's a whole lot easier when you're looking at a 32-bit dump. So that's a good, useful new feature. One thing I really like a lot is a new feature of the find dialog. Let me find something to, here, let me, that'll be a good one. I'll just search for the name Abby, running as username Abby. So when you did find before, it would tell you either this is something you're going to see in handle view or DLL view. It's a kernel handle, or it's a DLL mapped into process space. Now, though, if it is a handle, it'll tell you what type of handle. So it'll tell you whether it's a file, a token, a DLL, a memory section, events, synchronization object, mutant, which is a mutex, or a bunch of other different kinds of kernel objects. So this saves you the time of having to go into handle view and find out what type of object it is. You can see it right away in handle view. Additional changes in the process dialog, process properties dialog. New features. So ASLR. In Windows 8, there's additional types of ASLR that are available, and for apps that are for EXEs that are compiled for high entropy ASLR, that will now get reported here. Another really cool feature is this auto start location. So what Process Explorer now has is some of the functionality of auto runs. You have a process. It may have been started by some auto start entry point, like the run key in HKey local machine or HKey current user. Process Explorer will now look for it and report it if it finds it. And if you click Explore, it'll take you to where it is actually configured. So you can do that from Process Explorer without having to run auto runs. Okay. Security tab. The security tab. I've got everything written down because there is so much information in here, I cannot possibly memorize this session. The security tab has the columns are now sortable, and it's really useful on a domain joined machine. In your domain at work where you've got a ton of groups that you're a member of, now you can sort them by group name, so you can list them by domains versus NT authority versus built-in, and the flags, whether it's a mandatory one or deny only or owner or integrity. So all these are sortable. For services, I don't know how important this is, but you can go to the services tab here, and now you can stop and restart and pause and resume services from here instead of having to go into the MMC. Another big feature is GPU graph. Let me find something that actually does some graphics. Yeah, tons of graphics here. It'll show you graphics processing unit information, statistics, graphs, et cetera. So a whole lot has gone into that. And finally, I'll go back to the slide deck for this. The color scheme. This is the old color scheme. You know, this was introduced around the time of NT4, the black background, the green grid. It looked like an oscilloscope kind of diagram with the electric greens and things like that. But now, today, in the modern Windows 8 era, it's all modern and sleek and pastel. And how many of you prefer this? Yeah. I had some feelings about it, and I sat down with Mark and spent about 10 or 15 minutes talking to him about why the previous version was better. And he listened intently the whole time, didn't say a thing. And when I was done, he said, "Have you gained weight?" Get no respect. So, but he promises if you don't like this, he'll give you your money back. Process monitor. Process monitor has not gone through as many changes, but there are some really cool ones that have come in. So let's go straight to demo. Let me fire up procmon here. Procmon, because it's in my path, I can do it from here. It, of course, always requires admin to monitor stuff. Okay, and let me do something. Okay, so some new things that have been added. Oh, this is going to take a while. There it goes. Okay, so it found an instance of that. I'm going to highlight this. All instances of silence is foo. Okay, now what you've been able to do in the past is when you have highlighted events, you can navigate between them by opening up the properties dialog, and instead of clicking the down arrow to go down one event at a time, you can say next highlighted. Okay? But now, you don't need to do it that way. You can use F4 and Shift F4 as a time saver. Another thing you can do with these highlight filters is now you can convert them into regular filters. So anything that you've selected for highlighting, you can say add that to the filter dialog, and it's gone from here, and now it becomes an actual filter, an include filter instead. So that can be useful. Another thing that's really cool about filtering, let me clear that one out, is suppose you don't want that specific thing included. You want something based on that, like silence is foo. I want something that begins with that. So now, instead of having to add that to the filter and then go back and edit it, right click, edit filter, see silence is foo, and it opens up the filter dialog with that ready to go. Now I can modify it. So I want begins with silence is foo instead. So now I get all these other events as well. So that's a time saver. I really like that one a lot. How many of you spend a lot of time in Process Monitor? How many of you spend more time with Process Monitor than you do with your own families? Yeah. Another really cool feature that was recently added is bookmarks. So say you want to remember a very specific point in here. All you have to do now is select that event and press Control B. B for bold, B for bookmark. And now this will be remembered. And if you save this to a PML file, it'll save that. You can send it to someone else, tell them the bookmarks are the events that I think are interesting. So you can bookmark multiple events, and then you can navigate between them with F6 and Shift F6. So I like that one a lot. Let me see, one more thing to show here. Let me start a new process. Turn that off and filter on operation is process start so that I can show you that the process start event, the first event in the process history, now also includes the current directory at the time the process started and the entire event block, environment block, the entire environment block for the process at the time it started. Because different processes will have different environments, and this can be a big clue when you're trying to debug things. So that's what's new in Process Monitor. Any questions about any of this? Okay. Is this too geeky? Not geeky enough? Too fast, too slow, too cool? That's what I was afraid of. Auto runs. This is, I think, the most useful tool for removing malware off of a system. For not the trickiest malware, you know, rootkits are not going to, you're not going to do anything with rootkits with auto runs. But it is really rare that I'm not cleaning malware using auto runs. When someone's got something that's, you know, hooked into their system, whether it's a toolbar invading Internet Explorer or something running in the background whenever they log on, AutoRuns is the tool that will show it. So some new features in here. A bunch of new auto start locations, so it looks for more places. There's tons of places that you can hook things in into Windows, and AutoRuns has added many additional ones. One feature I would like to show you, but that I can't, in part because I appear to have, here it is. Okay. So it has always had right-click, jump to entry, and it'll take you to where this auto start entry is configured. So this zoom it is configured to run because of HKEY current user software, Microsoft Windows current version run in the registry. I can right click, jump to entry, and it'll take me right to that point where it's defined. That's been there for a while. There's a new feature called jump to image. And what that does is whatever the exe or DLL is that is the target of what you're looking at, it'll open Explorer and jump to it. Unfortunately, I discovered late last night that there's a bug in the current version, so Mark is going to post an updated version of that real soon. It was working fine before we posted it publicly. No idea what happened there. Other things have changed. It now will show you what the filter is. So in auto runs, you can hide events that maybe aren't interesting to you. And this will tell you what that filter is. You can hide everything that belongs to Windows or everything that comes from Microsoft and just show third-party stuff. You can also turn on signature verification for everything, and then the filter will tell you whether it's verifying signatures as well. Another thing that he added was a file association. So if you do a save of a trace, it'll save to start at ARN. Now there's a file association with that. So once you've run auto runs on your system and you save an ARN file, double-click the ARN file, it'll automatically open up into auto runs. So you don't have to open auto runs, do file open, and all that kind of thing. Auto run C is the command line version of auto runs, and some additional features have been added to that, particularly to support file hashes, as well as to support enumeration of the auto start entry points of all users on the system. So you've got, you know, the HKey local machine and Windows and things like that is common to all users on the machine, and then you have per user auto start entry points. Auto runs used to show you just one of them. You'd say, this is the user I want to enumerate. Now you can use star on the command line to say, enumerate the auto start entry points for every single profile you can find on the system. PS Tools is a suite of utilities that are all command line utilities, including PS Exec, PS Password, PS Ping is a new one that I'm going to show you in a bit. So PS Exec is the tool for running processes in a different security context, such as running it as local system or running it on a remote machine. And there's a new version that is on the way but hasn't been released yet. And maybe we can get some applause to get this released. Maybe he'll respond to that. Well, let me show you the feature first. Let me show you the feature. And then you can applaud or not. Okay, so let's close this out so we can see here. Okay, you know what? I thought I bumped the font up here. Options, font. Hopefully that's a little better. Okay, so in the past, if you just do psexec-scmd, okay, that's running, thank you lawyers, and user license agreement. That will run cmd.exe as local system in session zero, non-interactive desktop, and this is kind of like a telnet session to that. You can see here, oh my goodness, there it is. Okay, it took a while. So here's the psexec service. It's called psexe-svc. It is the parent process of cmd.exe. If you've got multiple psexec sessions going on, that service is supposed to keep track of how many things it's got going on and not to close itself out and shut down until everything is released. But that can lead to some race conditions. What if a request comes in right when it's about to shut down? Can the new one get configured and started up? And so there have been some hard-to-diagnose errors. And so what Mark has added in version 2, and it's a good thing he did 2.0 because he was getting near the limit. The current shipping version is 1.98. So without a new major version release, he's, you know, going to have to go to three digits or something. So psexec-r, some other name, cmd. No. Let's do that again. psexec-s, run as local system, -r. Okay. So now, The service is called someothername.exe. The service name is some other name. So what that should allow me to, what that should allow me to do now is open up another one and do psexec-s-r second name cmd. And there it is. So now I've got two separate services managing these things. So you can have for each psexec session you want to have going on, you can just set up a different one and the race conditions go away. And if you want to hide the fact, you can also use it to hide the fact that you're running psexec, because if they're looking for psexe service, they're not going to see it. So that's really stealthy security stuff. Of course, you know, the image has, you know, sysinternals, signatures, and everything like that all over it. So does this seem like a useful feature? Do you think Mark should accelerate getting this out the door? Yeah? How many of you use psexec for evil purposes, for hacking into systems you're not supposed to be in? Come on. Okay. How many of you have been to the Hacker Tools sessions or are going to go to the Hacker Tools sessions? Yeah. How many of you work in environments where you want to download the sysinternals suite and your proxy looks at it and says, no, that has malware in it? Does that happen? I have that at several customers where their proxy looks at it and says, no, pskill is malware, psexec is malware. Silliness. Okay, pspassword, the book version, what's in the book is actually accurate and complete. What happened is some of these tools are really old. And as we were going through the book, we started looking at the command line syntax and the behaviors and what some of these tools did, and rethinking them and thinking, you know, this didn't really work very well. And pspassword is a tool for changing the password of an account. It didn't really work well for domain accounts. And so a whole new command line syntax was introduced, but it didn't get released until several months after the book came out. So anyway, that's one of the things that changed. And then we have psping, which is a brand new utility, not in the book at all. So I'm sure you're all familiar with ping. Ping uses the ICMP protocol to connect to, or to get an echo request back from another machine, right? To see what's the latency between here and there. The problem with it is that ICMP is often closed. I'll demonstrate that in just a second. But psping is also used to measure a bunch of other stuff in addition to ICMP echo requests. You can find out how long does it take to actually connect to a TCP port. How long does that take? And what about the round trip time for data going back and forth? Or what if I want to stress out the bandwidth and see how much traffic can I get between those two? It can also show you histograms that you can paste into Excel. So here's the ICMP ping usage. It's very similar to the ping that comes in the operating system. Except that it also adds dash H for print a histogram. You can specify the time between them. So instead of once a second, you can send these requests immediately, one after the other, by setting the interval to zero. You can also set a warm-up time. So, you know, do some of these, you know, get some of these going, and then start measuring how long it actually takes. TCP ping adds, all you have to do that is just add colon and a destination port. Let me go demo this for just a second. Let me get out of that thing there. Okay. Okay. psping www.microsoft.com. What's the result going to be? I'm assuming I have a network connection. I haven't really. End user license agreement. Let's read through that. Okay, is this going to work? Why is it not going to work? Request timed out. Because www.microsoft.com is not going to respond to ICMP echo requests. It's got that firewalled off completely. Let's do psping microsoft.com port 80. How long does it take to open a TCP connection to port 80? That's a little bit more useful. How long does it take to get an ICMP echo back and forth is irrelevant, really. What you want to know is, can I get a connection to that remote machine, and how long does it take to get that to happen? Additional things you can do are add things like no interval. Okay, so just one after the other after the other. And let's do it 20 times. And let's generate a histogram. So it captures all that data and then shows you in all these things from top to bottom, from the longest to the shortest, you know, how many fell into each of those buckets. Does that look useful? And it's free. Okay, some other things that it will do, like I said, TCP latency and bandwidth testing. This requires, what you want to do is find out how long does it take to send data up there, to upload data, or retrieve data back. So you make a request, you get data back. Clearly, that requires something cooperating on the remote side. So you need PS ping running on both. On the server, you'll run this command line and just specify dash S the source IP address, so which interface you want to use, and the port you want to open. Okay? And then on the client, you specify PS ping and that destination, that port. And you can specify histogram again, the request size, and whether to send or receive. Maybe you want to do an upload, maybe you want to do a download. And this will allow you to do either one. And so now you have the two processes cooperating, and it'll report what that latency is. And then the bandwidth, you add to that, this is going to create a bunch of threads and try to flood the channel completely, and it'll tell you what the bandwidth usage capability is. So that's PS ping. That'll be in the new book. Okay, chapter 7, process and diagnostic utilities. VMMAP. So VMMAP is a utility that shows you for any given process. You say, I want to take a look at this process. It'll tell you, here's what's in its virtual memory space. Different types of memory, whether it's image, whether it's readable or writable or executable, whether it's heap, whether it's private data. One of the new features it has is it'll show you what's called unusable memory. So let me just go to demo here. So I need to get rid of that. Okay. So let's take a look at vertmem test. Actually, wait, no, let's take a look at Explorer. So one of the changes is for image memory, okay, which is basically EXEs, DLLs, things are going to be executable. For each region, it will tell you now whether ASLR, address space layout randomization, is enabled for that region. And the reason for this is, you know, it's not just a process has ASLR. Each image in it may have ASLR enabled or disabled. And there was one vulnerability we had a few years ago where the process had ASLR, but there was this one DLL that was loaded into it that didn't. And so it was always in a fixed location, and it became the source of a vulnerability because the attackers knew this will always be in this location, and when we hit it, we can reliably execute code. So one of the reason for ASLR is to make it harder for attackers to execute arbitrary code by injecting code into a process. Another feature here is this new category of memory. See, it shows you all the different categories of memory. This new one called unusable memory. And if you read Windows internals and look up the different types of memory, unusable is not in there. This is a category that Mark recently defined through this tool. And I think I have enough time. I think I'm going to do a demo of this one. I have to go to my host machine for this. So let's see. Have projects. Oh, you know, I'm going to have to open up Visual Studio for this. So the idea with unusable memory is memory allocations at the lowest level, when you call the virtual alloc API, the Win32 API, to allocate memory, okay, it always allocates it on a 64K boundary. Even if you're only allocating 5 bytes or 32 bytes or, 2K. It always allocates on a 64K boundary. So if you call that multiple times, the space between your allocation and the next 64K boundary is unusable. So here I've written a simple little program that calls virtual alloc, and it's allocating 1K at a time. So let me build this and run it. Whoops. Okay, what did I do? Oh, wrong command. Debug unusable memory. I'm wearing the wrong glasses, that's why I did that. Okay, so fire up the mmap. Take a look at create unusable memory. This is before it does the memory allocation. And you can see here 540K of unusable, a block of 18 meg of private data. Come in here, allocate the memory. Okay, now it thinks it's allocated 4 meg. Let's go here, refresh. Okay, and we see here that now it is actually allocated an additional, what was it before? I guess 16 meg here. If you go through here, you'll see all these private data blocks of only 4K. And there's an option to show free and unusable regions. And you'll see here, between each of these, private data 4K. Now, I allocated 1K. What is actually given to the process is 4K. That's the memory page size, and so it's granted to the process in those page units. So it's going to show 4K, but in between, there's 60K, because you see here, the actual allocations are on the 10,000 hex borders. 1B0,000, 1C0,000. So that's the only place where virtual alloc can allocate stuff. So what you end up with in this case is a ton of memory that is not usable. Now, why isn't that a problem all the time? Because are any of you developers here? A few. Okay, so you probably make allocations all the time that are a lot less than 64K, right? So let's see how you normally do that. Let's run this other routine instead. And what this is going to do is do a heap allocation using the new the C++ new operator. Rebuild. I'll close this out. I have to rebuild that again. Okay, run the program. Reinitialize VM map to show this. Okay. Run that and allocate it. Refresh. And you see here, it has allocated a bunch of heap memory, but there's no unusable. Because what the C++ new operator is doing is, under the covers, somewhere in there, is a memory manager that's allocating the large blocks. And then the memory manager within the process is granting the bits to the app that it actually needs. And so, you don't end up with lots of unusable memory. You may have some kind of fragmentation within the memory manager, but nothing like you would get if you were calling the low-level API. This feature was added, by the way, at the request of the Visual Studio team. Now, why would they care about something like that? They're the ones implementing the C++ memory managers. and the other memory managers have to do this. So they care about this kind of unusable memory. But that can be a really interesting thing to look at when you're troubleshooting memory problems. Okay, I'm now going to talk about procdump. Procdump, thanks to the efforts of Andrew Richards, has gone through. Andrew Richards is a senior escalation engineer at Microsoft. He used to be on the Exchange team. Now he's on Windows OEM. He worked on procdump for Mark for a really long time and added a ton of features. It has gone through 4 major updates, more than any other tool. Procdump is a utility. I do need to explain what procdump is. It's a utility that allows you to capture a user mode process dump, a memory dump of a process, which is a state and time capture of here's what the memory is, here's what the stacks are, here's what the registers are, here's what modules are loaded into the process at this particular point in time. And what procdump allows you to do is say, when the process, I'm going to monitor the process, or procdump is going to monitor the process, and when something particular happens, capture a dump at that point, or capture a series of dumps. So it may be something like CPU exceeds a particular threshold, or memory allocation exceeds a particular threshold, or some performance counter exceeds a particular threshold. When that happens, I want to know what the heck is going on in the process. Capture a dump file. So this is the version of procdump as it existed at the time the book came out. That's 3.04. We're now up to 6.0. Tons of new features, including, oh my goodness, there's so many here. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but I do want to show you one extremely, extremely cool feature that I think might blow your socks off. Let me click through these. I did talk about these. If you want to watch the recording, I'm going to go into more detail in the American version of this. But I want to make sure. I covered some other stuff I didn't cover in America. Come back to this. Let me show you this feature I love in procdump. Okay, first of all, I do want to show you that procdump/?? shows you the information you just saw. Add a dash E, and it'll show you a bunch of example command lines, which you can copy and use right away. That's a nice, useful feature. But let me see. I need an admin command prompt for what I'm about to do. Procdump dash MP for mini plus dash I, \dumps. Dash I says register procdump as the just-in-time debugger for Windows. So what this is saying is whenever a process crashes and the just-in-time debugger has to kick in, make it procdump and make it capture a mini plus dump, which is something specific to procdump that other dump tools don't do. It's a lot smaller than a full memory dump, and a lot more useful than a mini dump. So configure that. This requires admin rights. And now I'm going to crash vertmem test. I have a thing here that will crash. I just check that box and hit escape. And bang, procdump kicks in. And if I go into C dumps, dump files have been captured by procdump. I love that. But here's the feature that is really incredible. Let's see. Procdump can be used to capture, like I said, let me start up a new instance of vertmemtest. I'm going to monitor vertmemtest, this sample utility I wrote, so that when the CPU usage exceeds 80% per CPU, so the equivalent of a CPU at 80%, which on a 4-proc system, which is what I have in this VM, would actually be 20%, capture a dump. Actually, let me go into the dumps folder so I can do that. Procdump-C 80%-U for per processor, and the name that. OK, so now it's monitoring vert memtest. Nothing new here. OK, and when it exceeds the equivalent of 80% of a single core, it's going to write a dump to this location. When it exceeds that for a threshold of 10 seconds or more, it'll capture one dump. Now, here's the cool part. Here's process monitor. So clear out the filters and start process monitor tracing. I'm going to go into vert mem test. And I'm going to run a little test here that is going to hog CPU time while attempting to access a particular file. And you'll see here the proc dump is monitoring that. And when it hits 10 of them, it's going to generate a dump file. But I'm not even going to let it get to that point. I'm going to turn off the CPU hog. And so now, take a careful look at this output that proc dump created. The time, what the trigger was, and information about that trigger. Now let's go into process monitor. And we'll turn on profiling events. Profiling events include things like process profiling, which is once a second, process monitor will capture some information about every process, whether it did anything or not. The process profiling events I don't actually care about, so I'm going to exclude those. And for just a moment, let me turn off all the other events, and you'll see procdump 64 generated events that it sent to specifically to procmon. So procmon has an API that you can send debug output profiling events to and enter it into the capture stream. And if you go over here and take a look, that is exactly the output that was generated from procdump. Is that useful? Hold on. Let's have a look. Hold on. I'm going to show file events as well. And now you can see when procdump reported an event, which may be an exception, which is when it really is useful, you know, some file exception happens. You know, file exceptions aren't normally monitored by process monitor, right? It looks at file events, file access events, but not exceptions generated from within a program. But if procdump is monitoring that, now you've got all these things in here as well. So here are all the calls from vert mem test trying to access this log file and interspersed with the CPU output, the CPU reports coming from procdump. So remember back to the days before process monitor when there was regmon and filemon. You had one tool capturing, here's all the registry events, and a completely separate tool capturing all the file events. And merging them together was approximately impossible until process monitor came along, and now you've got everything in one place. File, registry, network, process events like processes starting and stopping, DLLs being loaded, etc. Now you've got anything that procdump can capture and report on can be captured into your process monitor event stream. So now you can monitor things like exceptions, CPU usage, when memory spikes, things like that, and it'll all show up in one place. I think this is a tremendously valuable addition to process monitor and procdump better together. Sound good? Debug view. Nothing really big changed here except the command line syntax. We looked at the command line syntax, which had this client and server, which was developed back in the 90s. And when we looked at it in 2011, it really didn't make as much sense anymore. And so we changed the names to agent and viewer. And so the command line options all had to change. But there's really no major change in that. But if you have anything that's using debug view. How many of you know what use debug view at all? So debug view is something that processes can output things to be looked at in a debugger, just text that appears in the debugger if a debugger is attached, and if a debugger is not attached, it doesn't go anywhere. Debug view, you can run that, and all the debug output coming from all these different processes can show up on your screen. And you can use it for looking at things, debug output on remote systems as well. So that's what this tool is all about. Some additional things were added at that time just to turn on some features from the command line instead of having to go into the GUI. So that's debug view. LiveKD went through some changes. LiveKD is a utility that lets you do kernel mode debugging of a snapshot of your system, of your current live system. So it'll capture a snapshot of kernel memory and then allow you to use a kernel debugger to analyze what's going on. So what changed is it allowed you in the past to save that kernel memory to a dump file. The problem was that as it was doing that, as it was capturing this information to the file, the operating system was continuing to run. And so, you know, as it started at the beginning, you know, some things may be changing along the way. And so you end up with an inconsistent view because you're capturing it as it's continuing to change. With the new features, with the dash M option, it does a mirror dump. It actually does a copy on write for all that stuff. So it can capture a snapshot in time and capture that even while the operating system is continuing to run. List DLLs was added some features to show full file version information. And you can also, there's a new option that lets you report only the unsigned DLLs that are loaded into a process if you're trying to find things that maybe don't belong in there. And finally, for the process and diagnostic utilities chapter, the handle utility, which is a command line utility that's similar to Process Explorer and shows the kernel mode handles that are owned by a particular process. It didn't change at all, except for one thing. It uses the same kernel mode driver that Process Explorer uses. So when you update Process Explorer, if its driver had changed, you need to update handle at the same time. I would also advise, you should be updating. You know, I see people running demos all the time where they've got all the sysinternals tools from 2010. You should update them all the time because there's a lot of bug fixes that are coming out as well as all the new features. Security utilities, chapter 8. SigCheck went through a number of additional features. I think I've got a screenshot in here. Yeah. So the dash I option used to report just the signers of the code signing cert that signed the file, or the cert that signed the file, and the subject names of the certificates in the certificate chain. But with Flame and Stuxnet really abusing certificates, it now reports a whole lot more information about every single certificate, as well as the countersigners, such as the timestamping certificates. Another fairly new feature is version 1.70, if it was an unsigned file, it would just report the file date according to the file system. And of course, that date is really easy to falsify or change just by accident. If you download it from the internet and it gets extracted or something, you may get today's date instead of the date that it actually came from. So now, it will show for a portable executable file, an exe, a DLL, anything like that, the link date is actually embedded into the headers of the PE file, of the binary file. And SigCheck will now report that instead. Because, I mean, that can be falsified very easily, but not by accident. So showing the link date of when was this thing actually built tends to be a little bit more useful. Let's see if there was anything else I needed to talk about on that. I'm going to get to some other stuff. Desktop utilities. BG Info. How many of you run BG Info to change the wallpaper to report stuff about your system? How many of you are using it on Windows 8 or Server 2012? And it says, I believe, Windows 6.2, Windows NT 6.2. Because internally, that's what the version numbers say. Eventually, he's going to come out with one that says what the marketing name is rather than the internal number. Desktops went through a major change. Desktops is a utility that lets you have multiple virtual desktops with different apps running on the different desktops. When Windows 8 came out and all that stuff changed around with the start screen and all that, desktops broke really badly. So they did a bunch of work to get it to work correctly there. And Zoomit, I'm sure all of you are familiar with Zoomit because everyone is probably using it in their demos. How many of you use it on your own systems? My son, my 10-year-old son, just last week, I was showing him something on my computer, and I just reflexively hit Control-1 to zoom in on something so he could see it better. And he said, "How'd you do that?" And he insisted that I put zoom in on his computer and show him how to use it. It's pretty cool. So some new features in there. It now has an auto start entry point built in. So I like to have Zoomit running all the time when I log in. You run Zoomit, and right here in the options dialog, run Zoomit when Windows starts, check that box, and it puts an auto start entry point in HKEY current users. So just for your own user account, when you log in, Zoomit's always running. It also lets you change the initial magnification level. I don't know if that's useful at all. But this one here, the animate zoom in and out, is a new feature. You can turn off the animation because you probably notice, you know, when I zoom in, it's animated, right? And then zoom back out. When you do that over an RDP connection, a remote desktop, you know, it's kind of sluggish sometimes. So there's now an option that you can turn that off and it'll just snap to the new zoom magnification. File utilities, strings is very similar to the Unix utility that looks through a file and looks for printable characters, sequences of printable characters. It now offers a -F option so you can start from a particular offset in the file instead of going through the entire file. Disk usage, DU, went through a number of changes. And this is a utility I actually use a lot. I'm going to do this on my host machine. Is that still? Okay, here we go. Clear this stuff out. Okay. So DU added the -C option, which reports the output as comma-separated values instead of as just this human-readable thing. Let me demo what it used to do. DU-L2 says go down two levels from here, right? So it would show you, you know, this number here with, you know, pretty formatting and the name of the directory. DU-C turns that into CSV. You can do more cool stuff with CSV, right? But I'm going to show you something I think you're going to like a lot. This is new. -CT says tad delimited. Is that useful? Do you know why this is more useful? Watch this. CLS. DU reported as tab delimited values, go down two levels from this directory down and pipe it into this utility. How many of you have heard of clip.exe? I think it's the most useful utility ever written other than the sysinternals utilities. It comes in Windows, and what it does is whatever comes through its standard input is copied to the clipboard. Now let me show you why that's useful. Run that to the clipboard, open Excel, paste. Now, for some reason, Excel likes tab separated a lot more than comma separated. No idea why, but filter, auto do that, and let's make that look good with commas, and now I can do some useful stuff. Now I can see which directories are actually the ones taking up the most space. In addition, there's a lot more columns now. So you've got current file count, current file size, file count, directory size. So for each of these, it'll show you how many files are in the current directory And then file count is how many are in the current directory and below. Current file size is how many, you know, what's the size of the files in this one directory? And then directory size is, you know, how, you know, what's the space being consumed in this directory and below here? Does that look useful? I use this all the time because I run out of disk space a lot. Okay. How are we doing on time? Disk utilities. How many of you liked clip.exe? Was that worth every dollar you spent or every euro you spent getting here? I love that utility. Contig went through some. How many of you know what Contig is? Okay. Do you like it? Yeah. Okay. So there were some changes in it. It'll be in the book. We're going to run out of time. Whois? Whois added a neat little feature, and that is dash v. So the way whois works is if you ever do a network trace, a netmon trace or anything like that on whois, it goes first to a first level server to find out where the registrations are, and then goes to the servers that it reports. Dash v gives you that information back. Oh, wait, if I do this, I'll get in trouble. This is dangerous. shoot. Here's the command I would like to run. Whois dash v, www.microsoft.com. If you do the dash v, the first level server will report every domain on the internet that has Microsoft.com embedded in the name, even if it's not Microsoft.com, but Microsoft.com, a bunch of rude stuff, some other thing. So when you're not at work or when no one's around, run this command with the new version of whois. It's just amazing how many people like to abuse Microsoft.com this way. Actually, I think it's better if you do it this way. Okay. But I can't do it because it would cost me my job. It's just amazing what's out there. Okay, another new utility, RU. Registry usage. You saw DU and how it can show you what's in directory and subdirectories. RU is a brand new utility, just came out in March, that reports the same thing for the registry. Okay, and the syntax is just like that of DU. So you do RU-CT. Oh, wait, let me do it from PowerShell. Because I get command line syntax help with that. So RU, come on. There it goes. RU-CT-V-HKLM tab completion from PowerShell. Come on. Why is this taking so long? Oh, my goodness. Okay, we do some diagnostics here. It's consuming some CPU. There it goes. Software, Microsoft, Windows. And I'll put all that. Let me just, I'm doing this on the wrong system. But you can see here, it's going to show you. Pipe that to more. Thank you. It's going to take a long time. But here, it's actually showing what I wanted right here. The CSV shows the path in the registry, current value count, how many values are in here, how much space do they take up, including null terminators and other things like that. The value count, how many values are in this this key. The key count from this location and down, the keys, how many keys in this key and all the subkeys, and the overall size. So this doesn't come up as much as DU in terms of trying to find problems, but we've had a number of cases where applications or services or something were storing a lot of stuff in the registry and actually causing system problems. So RU is useful for finding those, and that's a brand new tool. Running out of time here, so just really, really quickly, Core Info reports all the features of the CPU set, and tons of new stuff has been added. RAMMAP now has some command line options, so you can operate it from the command line. RAMMAP is a tool that shows you, instead of virtual memory, it shows you the actual physical RAM and what's in it, where it belongs, whether it's driver code or whatever. Okay, so if you want to see any of the past sysinternals primers, here's some links to the ones that are on channel 9. And the sysinternals website, the sysinternals blog. If you want to know whenever anything new comes out from sysinternals, the blog will announce it, so just subscribe to that feed. Mark has a blog, which he talks about a lot of case the unexplained and some other interesting things. The Windows Sysinternals Administrator's Reference, first edition, is still available. I've got some blogs. Let me see. The utility I showed, vertmemtest, if you want to play with that, it's on the first of these two blogs. Andrew Richards, you can watch him on Channel 9 on the show called Defrag Tools, which comes out every week, I believe, on Monday. If you watch it, it is really phenomenal what they do. Let me see. And if you want to see stuff specifically about procdump, there's three shows that he did specifically covering procdump and the changes to that. Related sessions, resources. Complete an evaluation on ComNet and enter to... Oh, you know what? This is the U.S. one. For some reason, my deck wasn't here when I got here, so this is the U.S. one. I don't know. I don't know what happened with it. But anyway, please do fill out the evals. The evals provide a lot of feedback that help us make sessions better for the future and let us know that we're doing the right thing or that we need to make course corrections for next time. But I would like to say, if you like the session, please fill out an eval. If you didn't like the session, please come up and talk to me instead. And I'll work on it directly, and it won't show up on my scores. So I appreciate that. I hope you found this useful and interesting and fascinating and geeky as all get out. So thanks a lot for coming. It was a pleasure to be here to speak with you today.